You call that a news update? This is a news update. It's Neighbourhood Watch.
Government targeting the cash economy. What's that all about?
Yeah, so that's just come out this week, only a couple of days ago. So apparently the federal government has indicated that it's going to basically crack down on this cash economy, also sort of known as the black economy. So this is more or less a bid to, they say, to reclaim apparently billions of dollars worth of lost revenue and reduce things such as welfare fraud. Apparently, according to our financial services minister, she says the cash economy is worth about probably $21 billion a year. So that's about 1.5% of Australia's domestic product. But it hasn't necessarily been met well by many, many people. The government is more or less saying that it's the economy that they're cracking down on is quite large. It's more along the lines of people stashing, $100 bills away and not declaring it. And along those lines, the government is also assessing the future of the $100 note, whether or not that's worth keeping. Apparently, there are more $100 notes in circulation than $5 notes, which some economists find not worrying necessarily, but it's interesting. So that sort of prompted this idea of a crackdown on this so-called black economy. It seems a bit strange calling it a black economy, given it's just cash. And cash isn't illegal by any means. But it's enough for the government to look into it, and we're not sure exactly how far these measures are going to go at this stage. They're going to look at it in the mid-year economic and fiscal outlook. The main headline that's caught people's attention in all of this is the idea that the $100 note might be taken out of circulation more so than the investigation itself. We've seen similar things happen in places like France and Sweden, where they've withdrawn large currencies such as that. So whether or not we're heading down that road, it's a little uncertain at this stage. However, like I said, the government say that this could potentially crack down on welfare fraud, but of course there are a lot of opponents to that. They're saying more than anything, this is probably going to benefit the bigger banks. Rather than actually help people on welfare fraud, it's very unlikely that, people who are claiming benefits are stashing, hundred dollar bills away and not declaring their taxes and so on. That seems to be part of the motivation behind this. And of course, it's been met with some opposition to that as well.
Of course. And so the next story we have is that South Australia entering treaty discussions with Aboriginal nations. That's really cool. Can you talk a bit about that?
Yeah, so this is actually a pretty happy Indigenous story for once, a positive one. So South Australia is more or less making history with this, actually. So the South Australian state government is looking into beginning treaty discussions with Indigenous nations to sort of help address numerous past injustices that have occurred. So the state government has basically set aside approximately about 1.4 million over the next 5 years to help this treaty process along, and there's going to be an appointment of an independent commissioner for treaties. At this stage, we're not totally clear on what these treaties are going to address or cover. Like I said, there's numerous issues which it could cover, of course. Whether or not even compensation could be involved in that, that's a very real possibility as well. But regardless of, we don't know the details at all besides the fact that there's going to be a treaty process, but it's been met with a lot of, a lot of positive comments from Indigenous leaders, and they think it's going to set a very good course for the future. Of course, Australia doesn't actually, as a whole nation, does not actually have a treaty with Indigenous people, which is quite, has always been a bit of a serious issue. Australia has a fairly dark history with its Indigenous population, and there have been moves to address that, but there's still a long way to go. And a treaty is, just a lot of people see it as just one, even though it may not produce, practical action in terms of funding and things like that, just having that treaty, that symbolic treaty, can really go a long way to mending a lot of those boundaries that we've created. So, places like Canada and New Zealand, of course. New Zealand is a big example there, where treaty has existed, I think, since white settlements began. They're very, very old. That happened straight away, whereas Australia, that didn't happen. And it's always been a bit of the elephant in the room, so to speak, that hasn't never been done. And at this stage, it's looking likely. I mean, the federal government over the years has never really, there's been talk about it, but there's never been a push to this extent that South Australia is doing to actually fund and promote this process of creating a treaty. So it's more likely that at this stage South Australia gets this through than other states are going to do it before the federal government even does it. So it's looking like states are probably going to have their own treaties, and whether or not that can eventually combine to one single treaty to cover the entire country. I mean, that's probably quite a few years down the track, unfortunately, but it's a very positive first step, and it will be very, very interesting to see how discussions sort of progress in this way as well.
Yeah, that's really interesting, because I know last week as well we were talking about how states were doing the Shifting Australia Day celebration. So it does seem like it's states leading the way there rather than that main government.
Yeah, that seems to be a bit of a trend at the moment, actually. I'm not quite sure what the reason is. I mean, the federal government has been criticised. I think what we spoke about last week, it hasn't really done much. I mean, and that comes down a lot to the makeup of the parliament. It's very hard to get even the simplest bills through at the moment. So states sort of stepping up and saying, well, if you're not going to do anything, then we're going to start doing stuff on our own. The Indigenous Treaty wasn't necessarily, unlike the climate change and the carbon emissions targets, that wasn't necessarily high on the federal government's agenda. But even so, it's very interesting that a state has taken this first move, and hopefully it's a very positive step in seeing other states follow suit very soon.
Absolutely. But the federal government, or the federal court, is doing something. They are ordering internet companies to block copyright infringing websites, including Pirate Bay.
Yeah, so not everyone's overly happy about this. Pirate Bay, I've never used it, so I'm not exactly sure how it operates necessarily. But yes, it's basically, Australia has always had fairly tight restrictions in terms of what you can access online. And a lot of what you can access online, shows like Game of Thrones, for example, is actually owned by our cable network, Foxtel. So Foxtel and other companies like Village Roadshow basically filed this case with the federal court back in February, saying, you know, you have to block these sites because, you know, in Australia you have to pay for this. To the extent where, and that hasn't necessarily been very popular. For example, if you want to watch things like Game of Thrones, when they come out in the States, you actually have to have a Foxtel subscription and watch it on cable TV, even if that's the only show you watch once a week, you still need that subscription. So that's part of the reason why sites like Pirate Bay have been very popular. We've also had, Foxtel also applied to have other sites like Torrens and Torrent Hound blocked as well, but at this stage it just looks as though, I believe, it's Pirate Bay has caught the injunction at this stage. I'm not too sure about the future of the other sites, but yeah, it's really it's interesting. It'll be interesting to see the backlash over the next couple of days, what people feel about it. I mean, on one side, Australia has had very serious problems in terms of pirating online content, but like I said, a lot of that has to do with the fact that it's very hard to access in real time when the rest of the world receives it. So there's a lot of work to be done there. Usually people say they're happy to pay for content, but if they have to wait, you know, a week or two before they get to see it, or they have to pay, like Foxtel, they have to pay for a full subscription for 1 hour's worth of viewing a week, and you're paying a base sum per month, then people are always going to gravitate to these pirate sites. So hopefully it could potentially, if the backlash is strong enough, some people are saying it may help, Australian companies like Foxtel to ease their restrictions a little bit, because it's still unlikely that people can always find a way around these things. You can block these sites, but another one's going to pop up eventually. And it may be difficult to access initially, but, you know, like I said, people find a way around it. And it wouldn't surprise me if something else pops up soon which is deemed to be illegal, and that gets blocked, and then something else gets blocked. It's just the way the internet works these days. And with that much media content in circulation with so many TV shows being produced, a lot of people in Australia are saying, you know, we deserve to access things easily and without having to pay for, you know, a year-long subscription to something you're never going to use anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. I know the same. It's really popular here as well. And I think it is just because it takes so long to get the shows here. If they were immediate, I'm sure it wouldn't, like, if that was part of the Foxtel deal, I'm sure that would be easier. But because it takes so long, and yeah, that full subscription, it's a lot easier and a lot more accessible to access it on websites like Pirate Bay, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, places like, I think it's the same for every cable news station around the world at this stage. I mean, it's not good for business at all when you have things like Netflix and things like that. People aren't necessarily watching cable TV anymore. They can watch what they want when they want on their laptops, and they can stream it to their television if they wish. So, of course, companies like Foxtel are going to challenge anything that they feel is a threat. I mean, it will be interesting to see what sort of state they're in, you know, 5 to 10 years from now, because very few people, 10, 15 years ago, Foxtel was incredibly popular. That was the only way you could access these shows. So people were happy to pay for those month-long subscriptions, and you could sit in front of the TV and you have hundreds of channels, but these days that's not a luxury. That's not something that's more of an inconvenience these days. So this move by Foxtel is sort of a pushback against this online invasion, as some people in that industry like to call it, this idea of having everything digitalised. So it's their way of pushing back against that, but it will be unlikely that Foxtel will probably be able to, you know, keep the same revenue as it once used to 10, 15 years ago.
That was Neighbourhood Watch. Ripper.